Inspire Eugene, episode 22.
Welcome to the Inspire Eugene podcast. Each week we showcase individuals with heartfelt and powerful messages to encourage you to take those first steps to unlock your very best work. Are you ready to get inspired? Here's your host, Brad McKinney.
Welcome to this episode of Inspire Eugene. I'm your host, Brad McKinney, and I have an awesome guest for you today, Mary Norman. And I connected with Mary through a past guest of Inspire Eugene, Thomas Price. So nice to have you on the show today, Mary. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself so the audience can get a better idea on who you are?
Sure, Brad, and thanks for having me. Well, I just moved to Eugene, and I was a teacher in California at Santa Rosa Junior College. And after I took an early retirement, I had the inspiration to start a television show called Voices for Social Justice. And we have in Santa Rosa something called the Community Media Center. And it's a place where you can go and get mentoring to produce any number of things that have to do with media. So I was interested in doing interviews, and they taught me how to use this little studio called the Live Link, where I was able to do interviews and run two cameras myself without having, I didn't have to have any cameraman come in. It was a compact, efficient studio where I could do my interviews, and I did a series of shows. About half of them were interviews. Some of them were monologues about social justice. And that's kind of, I think, what the interview is going to be about. Why was I so inspired to start a television show?
Yeah, absolutely. I love television. I minored in multimedia through my college days, and I actually got to be on the campus TV crew. So it's a very interesting dynamic, a TV show with all the different technologies that is actually used to produce the TV show. So I can only imagine the learning curve on that to learn how to do that with just one person.
Yes, and I'm not a techie, but the thing was is that I had to learn it in order to do what I wanted to do. So, and there I had really good teachers and people who helped me, and actually running the studio wasn't that hard once you got the knack of it.
Perfect. Well, we're going to get into the story about kind of what drove you to start that TV program, but before we do that, could I have you give us the quote that has most inspired you throughout your life?
Well, I have several quotes. One of them is, if the people will lead, the leaders will follow.
Great. And who said that?
It's a bumper sticker.
Oh, perfect. You know?
Yeah, it's basically about grassroots movements, and that real change comes from the bottom instead of from the top. And that's always been an important quote for me. And then, of course, another one is, if you want peace, then work for justice.
Perfect.
Because justice is not obtained, peace is not obtained automatically. You know, you have to sow the seeds of peace in order to have justice. And that's also one of my favorite quotes.
Awesome. Well, with the show, Social Justice, what inspired you to create the show? What was the moment where you said, I'm going to do this to make this project happen?
Okay. Well, first of all, I was bilingual in Spanish, and I had studied with a Jesuit priest by the name of Michael Kennedy down in Los Angeles, and he was the pastor of the church Our Lady Queen of Angels in downtown L.A., and his church was a sanctuary church, and this was during the 80s when I met him, and he was getting refugees from El Salvador. And so I went to his church, and I learned liberation theology from him, which is basically the preferential option for the poor. And after I took an early retirement, I had worked with the immigrant community my entire professional life as a bilingual ESL teacher. And all my students were coming from Mexico and Central America, and they all had stories. And there were, and so I began to realize after I had taken the early retirement that I wanted to do something for the immigrant population that was being dislocated because of wars and political strife and economic hardship. And so I started my program with the idea of following Father Kennedy's model of liberation theology and taking the preferential option for the poor.
Perfect. Well, when you started the TV show, you said you did some interviews, or you had a lot of your shows were around that interview style. Where did you find the people that came to interview on your show?
Well, I was in Santa Rosa, California, and we have a good progressive community there. We have the Peace Press, and there's a group of people in Santa Rosa who are, in fact, some of them were even in the ESL department, who are very interested. You know, when you're an ESL teacher and you start seeing and learning the stories of the students who are coming to you, you begin to get your eyes open to some of the hardships and the history that is, you know, coming across the border and why they're coming. And I felt like I needed to tell, and I think my one of my main goals of my show was to talk about U.S. foreign policy to Latin America, because that's sort of the juggernaut that encapsulated my show, as I was trying to tell the truth about what was happening to these people so they wouldn't be so scapegoated, and they would have Americans would have a sense of, oh, that's why all these people are coming north. You get my point?
Yeah, absolutely. Who was your first guest? Like, how did you approach that person, and were they just like, yeah, I definitely want to do this, or did you have to coax them into it?
Oh, no. One of my first guests was Davin Cardenas, and Davin Cardenas works for the North Bay Organizing Project, and people came to me after a while, because it was free speech, you know, it's like people knew that I was a place where they could talk about their work in the community, and so Davin worked with the North Bay Organizing Project, which is, you know, to help the workers and help the people get things done in their communities. Oftentimes it's harder for immigrant families, some of them undocumented, you know, to actually find any help in the community at all. So Davin came to me and he said, I'd like to talk about this project. And, he started a day labor center where the workers, who often have to stand on street corners to get work, they organized this thing where it was called the Grayton Labor Center, and it was where the workers who had come from Mexico or Central America, they would actually go into and become part of a cooperative, and then the contractors who wanted to contract labor would come to the Grayton Labor Center, and then they would work a better wage for the workers. So it was sort of humanitarian, the workers. If you go to L.A., if you go to some of these big cities, you see these Mexican workers standing on corners, and they're easily exploited. And so Davin said, you know, care for, and the whole community got together, and they started this labor center so the workers could have, they brought in English teachers, they brought in health workers, and they helped these workers negotiate better wages with better conditions and most of all, giving them dignity. You know, how would you feel if you had to stand out in a corner, you know, in order to get work? They gave them the dignity of the collective, you know, behind them, supporting them to get human rights.
I definitely like the aspect of bringing education to a community to help them realize that it doesn't have to stay the way it is. You know, things can change through learning different processes and those sorts of things to make change happen. I really like the aspect of your show that way, is educating a community rather than, you know, the other forms of going after a cause. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. And I was educating not only the Latin community, because they were finding out about this program too, because, you know, it was one way of telling the community of resources we had, but I was also educating the North American community, which, you know, oftentimes doesn't know the greater forces that are causing immigration.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we all have our beliefs, right? And until we can get something that kind of shakes that belief a little bit and makes us question it, then nothing's ever going to happen. No change takes place. But if
you
present some information in a way that shows, you know, that these folks are, you know, human beings just like the rest of us are, and they need the opportunities that we need, and you know, stop treating them the way you are kind of deal, in a more education-based, it's definitely, I think, the right way to go about it. And having a platform to do that is great. And being able to build that on your own, that's great as well.
Thank you.
Now, as far as causes and things that you've seen, like people being passionate about their causes, what do you think is the biggest mistake people make when they actually form a movement or go after kind of their passion that and trying to educate people about it?
Well, what comes to mind is someplace I have acquired the wisdom to release expectations. When you do something that is your passion and from your heart, I think the best thing is to give up expectations. It's, you know, how, you know, who's going to receive this, how are they going to receive this, and to just put your heart into it and do it because it's the right thing. It's, you know, it was like a spiritual endeavor, you know, to tell the truth, to, you know, to minister to people who had, you know, met much adversity and hardship and, you know, who are facing racism, and just to relinquish the idea of wanting to have an outcome and just put all your energy into doing the right thing and not worrying about the outcome.
Absolutely. I think if we look at across either businesses or causes or you know, life in general, I think a lot of the times we do get trapped inside of outcomes that we want to have happen instead of just letting, you know, things unfold the way they're supposed to, I guess.
Absolutely, because, you know, when you're working when you're an activist, you know, sometimes the problems are so big, you know, you despair. But, you know, I think it's actually it's in one of the spiritual books that I've read. It's, you know, is about yoga, which is relinquish expectation, relinquish outcome, do what you know to be correct, and the outcome will be beyond your wildest dreams. But you cannot, you know, don't even worry about that. Be in the moment, do the right thing, and, you know, you will create, just by telling the truth, you will create ripples that will have a far-reaching effect.
Absolutely. I mean, I think right now, similar to your TV show, Inspire Eugene is based on the premise of a thought that I had several years ago. I had fear and all sorts of things to overcome to be able to start this and, you know, be the voice of Inspire Eugene. But similar things is, it just, I started it because I had this belief that we all in life and business have the similar struggles, and we all want to work and do our best and to tell the stories about how local people in our community can actually do things and create change and build success around whatever project or activity that they're doing is kind of my goal of this. And it sounds like, you know, what you were doing is you wanted to create a TV show to give back and educate and form this movement. So it's similar paths, just different platforms.
Absolutely. And it takes a lot of courage, like you said, Brad, because you do have to overcome obstacles. I had to learn the technology of the LiveLink studio. Mm-hmm. I had to go to, you know, 3 trainings. I had to work with editors sometimes if I didn't, you know, if I made a mistake in the show, I needed to edit. You know, it's like sometimes in order to fulfill our mission, we have to reach, we have to go out of our comfort zone, and yet it was like, you know, like the chick that's inside of the egg, you know, he has to break out of that egg for his destiny, and it's kind of a violent act. You know, he has to actually puncture the shell and get out of it. And that's how I see, you know, transformational work is you have to go out of your comfort zone and you have to reach and you have to, you know, it's an effort of your soul and your whole being to push through to a new level. And, you know, it's like women are supposed to be quiet. I really had to overcome that one. You know, I had to realize my voice is important.
I have done a lot of studying and work on belief changes and how to do that and why is it important. And it's taught me to question it and to live in that space of discomfort more than the comfort, because nothing ever changes or nothing ever happens in the place of comfort. Only change will happen when we step outside of those areas and push ourselves to be uncomfortable. And I think that's the biggest reason why, you know, things stagnate and change doesn't happen, is because the masses are comfortable.
I totally agree.
So if you had to do it all over again, start a new TV show, what would you do differently?
You know, that's the hardest question, because I feel so happy that I accomplished what I accomplished. I don't have too many regrets, Brad. I feel, everything I did because I had the inspiration to do it, and I feel glad that I followed my inspiration. I made a name for myself in the community as a peace activist who gave a voice to the immigrant community. I was there when Andy Lopez was killed by the sheriff, and I'm sending my commentary down, and I'm going to do a new installment. We had a tragedy that happened, and you know, there's no news in Santa Rosa. There used to be a local news show, but it's like the people at the Community Media Center, we call ourselves citizen journalists. I have a degree in psychology. I've studied journalism. I've studied one of the most important parts of journalism is you have to check your facts, and you have a responsibility to tell the truth, and you have a responsibility to be able to show where you got your information, and that's how you a citizen journalist trains. And then I had very good mentors who were on KPFA, like Dennis Bernstein and Miguel Molina, and I would, you know, I had really good mentors, and I saw other people doing what I wanted to do, and I used them as role models.
Perfect.
Because they were breaking through. They were breaking through the silence. They were telling the truth. And I said, well, if they can do it, I can do it.
Perfect. Well, I know technology, and that was probably the largest hurdle over this over this project. Is there any other challenges that you faced and any lessons that you got from those challenges?
Okay, well, you know, there is certain information that's not given to the American people. There is censorship, and, you know, many people, one of the reasons I moved to Eugene is because a lot of people in Eugene do know what's going on, and they're trying to make a difference, and they're doing things for peace and justice. And you have to be able to it takes a certain amount of courage to tell the truth when it's being concealed. And so there's always this thought in the back of the head, in the back of your head. I mean, you know, they have the Patriot Act. They have, telling the truth there are certain peace activists who are on no-fly lists. Medea Benjamin, she's the head of Code Pink. You know, they are actually targeting peace activists with the Patriot Act, and they're putting them into the category of terrorists. It's pretty bizarre, but the thing is that if you say with the current situation in our country, we have lost a lot of civil liberties, and journalists are sometimes the target for different people. I mean, but I haven't seen Amy Goodman arrested. I haven't seen Naomi Klein, the author of Shock Doctrine. These people are still out there, but they're still taking a risk because they're the intellectual vanguard of a new way of being in the world, you know, where we don't exploit each other. And so that intellectual vanguard takes a risk because it's not popular to tell the truth. Do you hear what I'm saying?
Yeah, so what I'm getting out of that as far as the challenges are is that basically not someone telling you you can't say it, but getting those words out there, because there, I think there is a lot of censorship in the media, because on both sides, on every side, everyone wants to spin things in their own direction, and so it's really hard to get those the truth, right? Because everyone wants to spin the facts into whatever direction politically, or, you know, whatever their beliefs are. And the challenge that I'm getting from you is it's hard to break through all of that noise and actually, you know, show the truth with facts and things
right.
like that. Is that what I'm getting?
Right. And the, you know, I think one of the main tools I learned was something by George Lakoff. He was one of the people I studied. He's written books on I'm not finding the word I want, but George Lakoff said you have to reframe the question, and it's a political strategy. It's like, you know, let's say, you know, the media, the mainstream media is framing the question like, you know, oh, these wet backs, and they're all of our problems. And so I would always reframe the issue. Oh. It's taking the language back, reframing it as human rights, compassion for all, telling the truth about history, exposing U.S. foreign policy to Latin America, which was actually causing the immigration.
I'm a big proponent of reframing things. I think when it comes to problems, is looking at it in different directions and asking those five whys, right? I mean, why is it being told this way? What's
right.
the other side? Why
Absolutely.
why is the other side saying this? And then after you get through so many whys, you could probably get to the root of the problem, or kind of get the idea on these are the issues on one side, this is the issue on the other side, and you know the truth lies somewhere right in the middle, right? Usually
that's
right. how it works.
That's right. And we have to get beyond those polarizations. We have to arrive at some kind of synthesis. If we stay polarized, you know, there's no solution. In fact, that's one of the motives of the mainstream media, is to keep everyone polarized so nothing does happen.
Absolutely. I was a claims rep for many years for an insurance company, and I dealt with a lot of conflict. And I found that there's this idea of chunking, right? Chunking until we up or down, until we find a common ground. And then once we have a common ground, now we can start creating solutions to the problems that we have in front of us. And I think that model for solving conflict is true in any conflict that we're in. We find mm-hmm. eventually if we reach common ground, now once we have common ground, we can visually see all the solutions in front of us. And at that point, it's just about picking which solution is going to provide the best outcome for both parties or all parties.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
So what has you excited for the future right now?
You know, that's a really dicey question because we're literally at the 11th hour. This is the time when everything's falling apart. We have environmental, social, economic crisis. You know, the Ebola outbreak. All of the wars. I mean, some people think that we're heading towards World War III. In a nutshell, what has me excited about the future is that the earth is sacred, we are sacred, and everything strives for balance. And there's something I studied intensively that would be the subject for a whole other discussion, which is the prophecy of the Mayans about 2012. And according to the prophecy, we're in a time of purification, and you know, the next 20 years are not going to be like the last 20 years, and we're going to be facing global warming, you know, and food shortages and all sorts of stuff. So the future doesn't look real good. And what has me excited is that God walks with history, and there are prophets telling us the right way to go and the right thing to do. And it's the best thing we can do is to live out of our integrity. And what has me excited is that a lot of people are discovering their integrity, and they're doing a lot of work that's worthwhile that has to do with bringing justice.
Perfect. I get a lot of inspiration from the things that I read. What is the most inspirational book that you've read that's kind of shaped you throughout your life?
Well, the Bible, of course. You know, mm-hmm. The Bible, you know, the Old Testament and the prophets and the Book of Wisdom. Very beautiful. Book of Proverbs, you know. Do justice to the poor, and, you know, the people who do justice walk with God and have nothing to worry about. The New Testament is about the golden rule: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Love your neighbor as yourself. And then the Book of Revelation, I think, is something a lot of people are trying to interpret right now, because in some ways I think that the Mayan prophecy parallels the Book of Revelation.
Perfect. And when, as far as, kind of not going to go fast here at the end, but the last couple questions are more of a, you know, question answer, but the resource that you find best in the project that you use, what is the resource that you find that works, that you use every day?
Well, one of them is Project Censored puts out an annual book called The Most Censored Stories, The News That Didn't Make the News, mm-hmm. and it's a project at Sonoma State University, and I actually interviewed Peter Phillips on my show, and he was the PhD behind it. And Project Censored basically research to document some of the information I use on my show, such as the Global Dominance Group, the actual difficult stories about our own government that, you know, we don't really want to look at. But basically that empire, you know, the blueprint is that the U.S. wants military dominance across the globe, and we have military bases every place, and the military-industrial complex is getting all this funding and bankrupting our schools and taking our future generations, and it's pretty dark. But that's what a muckraker does, Brad. I'm a muckraker. Is you don't make the shit. You just stir it up. You don't create these problems, but you shed light on them. It's not a popular avocation being a muckraker, but that's what I am.
And the last question that I ask everybody is, if you were a superhero, what would be your superpower?
Sort of on the same line with the prophecy of 2012, I would just love for Americans to realize how much wisdom and how much advanced knowledge our ancestors had, particularly the Native Americans. There was so much, the cosmology, for instance, that the Mayans had, this, you know, it's like the typical American way of saying that they were not educated people. You know, we are our technology is superior. In many ways, the indigenous people have the wisdom that's going to save the planet, and it's called the wisdom of sustainability. The typical paradigm is not sustainable. And so I would say, if I would just like to let people know the great wisdom of the indigenous people on this continent, North America. Those indigenous people are our ancestors, and we can tap, I say, back to the future, because, you know, sometimes going to the future has to do with going back and retrieving what was lost. So that's what I would say about that.
Perfect. And if somebody wanted to talk to you more about this or get in touch with you, how would they do that?
They could go to my email address, which is okay. marynorman@earthlink.net.
Perfect. And is there any other words you'd like to say before we wrap up here?
Well, I think communication and media is the way, you know, people in this modern age, and I really support you for venturing forth and doing your show. And I think that I'm going to start a radio show or a blog myself, because there's some things that, you know, we need to share with each other. The internet's a wonderful place, you know, to get out there and, you know, get a Facebook page and put up some films and videos or some interviews, and it's one way we can take back our democracy if we can have common spaces where we come together and learn from each other.
Perfect. I agree with that. I hope everyone listening has a great and inspired day, and thank you for joining us today, Mary, and you have a great day too.
Thank you very much, Brad.
Thank you for taking the time to listen to this week's Inspire Eugene podcast interview. We are committed to bringing you great content each and every week. Please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and spread the word by sharing our page on Facebook. Have an inspired day, and we will see you next time.